at times is becoming farcical. And you have to really feel for these players and management. This isn't normal in any shape or form.
For your first chance to hear Brian O'Driscoll on OTB, download the OTB Sports app and turn on your notifications.
Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Yeah, you're welcome back. So we are talking rugby. It is, as ever, with thanks to Vodafone, official sponsor of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in. And I should mention a new development to look out for. Our new Brian O'Driscoll podcast series, now exclusively available on the OTB Sports app. So effectively, the OTB Sports app is the only place you can get it for the next 24 hours. Brian talking this week about who's going to be Ireland's number 10 during the November internationals, how the Irish provinces might fare this season, and why the women's team are struggling. So to listen to episode one, you need to go into your app store and download the OTB Sports app, and you can subscribe there to Brian O'Driscoll on the OTB channel. So it's free and in your app store and has all our content. So if you don't have it, jump on in. Now let's turn to the United Rugby Championship, the new frontier for the one-time Celtic League. Very happy to welcome in Craig Ray, broadcaster and journalist in South Africa. Craig, great to have you on.
Nice to be on, Joe. Thanks for having me.
So curious to get your perspective over there on the opening weekend and the opening weeks. Wasn't the blockbuster start from the South African sides that tournament organisers might have ideally liked? I think realistically, though, this is always going to be maybe a medium-term project, not least in a Lions year. And to be fair, in terms of the attention maybe it garnered over there, I presume when South Africa are playing the All Blacks, as it would if Ireland were playing the All Blacks, United Rugby Championship is a very distant second in the minds of South African rugby fans.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. Saturday was all about the Springboks versus the All Blacks. But, I think the United Rugby Championship has certainly got a bit of attention, and we are quite excited about it, actually, because first of all, there was no Super Rugby or anything in 2020. Well, there was Super Rugby for the first three or four rounds, and then it was all suspended. And then South African teams have just about been playing each other for the last 18 months. So that was quite exciting to see South African teams up against international opposition. So there was quite a bit of a buzz about it once the sort of disappointment of the All Black match had settled. Yeah, in terms of performance, it was pretty much what we expected. The two Irish sides were just too strong for the South African teams. The Lions getting a win over Zebre, and I think the Stormers will probably feel a little bit disappointed that they didn't get over the line against Benetton. But they've been shown what the standard of this competition is, and it's a bit higher than maybe they expected.
On the New Zealand game for a moment, New Zealand effectively won the Rugby Championship. They do have a game against South Africa to come at the weekend. They beat them 19 points to 17. I didn't see it, Craig. Generally, though, it's been described as a fairly torrid affair, high error count, and South African tactics criticised. Again, they do a lot of defending of their tactics, the world champions these days, kick heavy, lots of stoppages. And Niyana Bar came out and said, look, obviously we have our DNA, they have their DNA, that's the thing. Rugby would be boring if everyone played the same tactic. Saw a couple of, John de Villiers, for instance, expressed a certain disappointment with the tactics in ways. I mean, you win the Lions series, you're World Cup champions. I presume generally South Africans at large are more than okay with the tactics, or is it starting to become a talking point?
It's an interesting. I think on Saturday, for the first time, really, it felt like the tactics actually let them down. They could have won the game. They could have won it, and we would all be maybe singing from a different hymn sheet. But there were just a couple of moments on Saturday that were different to perhaps the Lions series. There were twice the Springboks were on attack on the All Black 22. That fragmented the All Black defense. And they were in good field position. Quick ruck ball was needed, and they could have really stressed the All Black defense, which was scrambling to get back into shape. And from the All Black 22, they launched up and unders again, which was, bizarre. I can understand the up and under tactic from around about the halfway line or 10 meters inside your own half, and you're playing territory and you're playing pressure and the sort of smothering game. But it just seemed like they are now so programmed that they're not willing to take any risks. And they spent the week defending that, saying, well, there were 14 All Blacks in the line and the space was behind. And I find that hard to believe inside the 22 when they had made some good, good momentum with a couple of broken tackles. So they are starting to come under a little bit of pressure for their style of play. And I think it's just that game was lost. The Springboks were actually in the ascendancy towards the end. The All Blacks were falling off tackles. They were making a lot of uncharacteristic mistakes because they were under pressure. But, you know, they're the All Blacks. They hang in there. They hang in there. And when they get the opportunity, they find a way to score. And the Springboks had their opportunities to put the game out of reach. Mm. And they didn't take them. And that's, you know, this loss is on them, really, not so much on the All Blacks.
Yeah, to be fair to Jean de Villiers, that was the nuanced point he made as well. It wasn't just a sweeping, the tactics are rubbish kind of a statement. He was saying they stuck too rigidly to them, and there were certain moments that when the opportunity was on, you have to change the mindset, whereas they stuck with their tactics very rigidly and very cautiously. One other interesting point out of this, I just saw on the Daily Maverick you were writing about a major milestone which went largely unnoticed, and you were noting the fact it went unnoticed. And then I saw a few people commenting saying, well, if you write about it, now we're noticing it. So, there's this, some kind of catch-22 in there. But largely unnoticed, you made the point that the team named for the upcoming game on Tuesday, you know, all of the focus is about Andre Pollard and Faf de Klerk and their retention and how's their form. And you were writing that 7 black players in the team, half the pack. And you said, after years of gentlemen's agreements and, quote, two black wingers syndrome, Nienaber and co have moved way beyond those petty parameters. And so it does seem like, bar your you're noting it, generally this is now just so in the rearview mirror for South African rugby when it comes to being an issue.
Yeah, it's an interesting one because it depends. Yeah, people get upset when you raise it. But, you know, for so long, South African rugby had these sort of idealistic quotas that no one, you know, fulfilled, and everyone sort of said, yes, we will try and transform the game and bring black players through, and then just ignored it. And Nienaber and Erasmus have taken the completely opposite view. They've gone, well, you know, we do have a charter, and we do have a target of transformation, but we're going to try and exceed that. But we're not only going to try and exceed it, what we're going to try and do is make sure it's not just window dressing. We're going to make sure that every black player we bring into the setup is, you know, there on merit, and that's exactly what they've done. And that's why it goes unnoticed, because the teams they select, no one's questioning the player's credentials as, you know, a player being there. And I just thought, well, I looked at the team, and I also had to do a second take. I went, well, hang on, that's, you know, quite a high number of black players, and unfortunately in South Africa, these things matter. Mm. And I did a count, and I went, wow, yeah, 7 black players starting, you know, and that's incredible. You know, half the team, really, and you know, I just think it's a significant milestone that went unnoticed and, you know, unheralded. And maybe that's a good thing. It just says that, well, these guys are selecting the best possible team. They're producing players. Doesn't matter what the color of their skin is. And they're all just good enough to be Springboks and world champions. And that's great. And, you know, long may it continue. And, you know, if they're a bit bolder in their selections, nothing to do with the player's race, but they could have, you know, Willie LaRue hasn't been playing well. If Apaleli Fassi came in, and if they'd done one or two other, Alton Janchis comes in a fly off, suddenly you're looking at a team that's 2/3 non-white, which in South African rugby context would be a massive milestone.
Back to the club scene then. So Leinster Bulls 31-3, Munster beat the Sharks 42-17, and you mentioned Stormers lost in Italy and the Lions won against Zebre. Can we take the Bulls maybe as a barometer here? Because we were all looking out for maybe the Bulls in particular against Leinster because they had won the Currie Cup maybe just 2 weeks ago. So there was a sense they were battle-hardened. They had scored lots of tries in the Currie Cup. Their coach obviously has international experience. We're all familiar with Jake White. And, well, I guess ultimately you would have to say it was a disappointment that they only managed 3 points. Leinster put on 31 points relatively comfortably. White afterwards was saying, look, Leinster are the benchmark of European club rugby. They have Gibson Park, who they can take off the bench. He's an international. They play Connacht on Friday, then Cardiff Blues, Edinburgh. That's their 4-game tour. Mm. I'm reading they do have financial backing to an extent, and they are maybe best placed to challenge. How diminished are they at the moment, Craig, with Springboks away and maybe other players missing? I don't know. Like, how good a reflection of the Bulls that you would have watched in the Currie Cup did we see?
Yeah, they are a little bit diminished, but they're nowhere near as diminished as, say, the Sharks in terms of Springbok call-ups. But, you've got to remember, Joe, in the whole context of South African rugby, all our teams are diminished. There's, as you guys have probably reported in the past, up to 300 South African players playing in Europe Japan and, you know, Britain.
Yeah.
So all South African teams are diminished in many ways. So the Bulls are, you know, probably the best of them. But I think this competition is showing us, and I think what the cracks are there for South African rugby. We really have to find a way of retaining top players in the South African provinces to be competitive consistently. I think a team like the Bulls will get better. I thought that performance, they were rocked back early on. I think they were 17-3 down within, you know, as many minutes, 15 minutes or so. And then they sort of held their own for the next 40 or 45 minutes. And then, you know, the end, it sort of got away from them again. I didn't think they were that bad. And Leinster are a fantastic side. And I think the Bulls are fast learners. They'll get better. But the reality is South Africa's best players, most of them, are playing outside of South Africa. So it's going to take a little while just to bring a lot of these good, promising youngsters up to the standard that they're going to encounter with Munster, Leinster, Cardiff, you know, Glasgow, good teams in Europe. So I don't think we must read too much into the first weekend. I'm not using it as an excuse, but I think it's going to take these guys half a season to settle down.
Yeah, that'd be my sense, to be fair. If this thing is going to work, and, you know, it really could work, then the first season will be a bedding in period. And to be fair, let's see how good Irish provinces and the other clubs are when they go to South Africa and the away games. You know, that's if they're able to play in South Africa. There's some talk of games in Italy given the COVID situation. Like, Jake White made an interesting comment as well, where he was asked about the Bulls going forward and can they compete. He said, it's an interesting question on whether we can realistically compete with the budgets of our new fellow teams, because Leinster's salary cap is about 185 million rand. Ours is 60 million. So in effect, three times. He said, when we played Super Rugby, people said it was the travel and time zones that were our biggest disadvantage. Maybe the salary cap will be this competition's version of the time zones and the travel, but we can't change that. So is he right there, in effect, that, like, from a budgetary point of view, these South African teams are working with a hell of a lot less than, I mean, Leinster are, you know, out there, but in the main, less than a lot of these European sides?
Yeah, I suppose, but you've got to also take that from whence it comes, because the Bulls have got some rich private benefactors, two of South Africa's richest men. They are, you know, Euro billionaires. Johan Rupert and Patrice Motsepe back the Bulls. So there is a salary cap.
Okay.
But, you know, what Jake is saying is if there wasn't a salary cap, he could tap into a lot more money.
Right. And does that apply to Sharks, Stormers, Lions as well?
No, because, I mean, the salary cap applies to all of them. But
no, but the ability
access,
to...
The access to money, yeah, doesn't apply to all of them. So, so where Jake's saying that from, he's coming from a position of, well, if I was able to, I could spend three times as much money.
Okay.
If I was allowed to. I think that's the sort of nuance between the lines of that statement. And I understand the salary cap in the South African context. There's not a lot of money going around in rugby at the moment. It's tough economically out there. But on the other hand, if we want to be competitive and we want to attract South African players back to South Africa, then maybe that salary cap has to be eased on the four URC teams at least. So if they do get equity funding, and the Sharks have that with MVM, which is Rock Nation or a partner in, they might have access to more funds if those guys are serious about growing the franchise. And, you know, maybe the Stormers or the Lions could find equity funding. And, you know, then it needs the salary cap to be increased. And, you know, it would be great if, say, not great for Munster, but say R.G. Snowman and Damian Deolinda could come back and play for a South African franchise in the URC. That would be good for the game. So, I think Jake's context there is saying, well, we have the money, but we can't access it.
Yeah. What are you expecting then from, say, Sharks, Stormers, Lions across the season?
Yeah, I mean, the Lions won, of course, but that was probably the easiest game they're going to play. But look, I think it's going to be a slog. I think the Sharks will get better. I think the Sharks' problem is they've got to stay reasonably disaster-free for the next 2 months at least, until they get 13 or odd Springboks back into the mix. They'll be quite a strong team once they've got their full complement of Springboks back. So I expect the Sharks to be quite good in the early part of 2022, when a lot of European teams might be touring South Africa. The Bulls, I think, will be competitive. They'll get better every week. I think Jake's a smart coach. They've got a decent side. I think they will learn lessons and take them on board. The Stormers, they're a very young, raw team. They don't have a lot of experience without their Springboks. I think they're going to struggle, but they'll give it a go. And the Lions, although they won, they really are probably the sort of the most unknown factor because they struggled a lot domestically recently. Ivan van Rooyen is an untested coach, and I think the fact that they brought in Jacques Ferreira as the defence coach, Albert van den Berg as a forwards coach, and Ricardo Loebscher, who was with the Springboks under Heineke Meyer as an all-round sort of tactical coach, that might help them. But I think those three teams in particular are going to struggle. And I've said this before, I've written this, the Stormers have got a lot of issues off the field. The Western Province Rugby Football Union, which is the mother body of the Stormers organisation, is on the brink of collapse, financial collapse, and it's about to go into administration where SA Rugby SARU is going to take over the running of it. So they've got a lot of big issues off the field, which is filtering down into the team.
Okay. You mentioned there, for instance, the Sharks missing 13 Springboks, give or take. So, I mean, that's a healthy number. It's extraordinary to think the Lions tour of South Africa feels like a long, long, long time ago. I mean, I'd say if you were to say to any of those Lions players now, could you imagine you were still in a COVID bubble and still playing and still slogging it out? They would find it hard to believe. And here you have the Springboks still going and another match to go against New Zealand. So you kind of wonder what break they might need at the end of all this mentally, whatever about physically. Is there word coming out? Are they institutionalized at this stage? Are they finding it okay or are they beginning to struggle?
Well, look, I mean, on the record, they're all talking a good game. They're all, I know we're going to get up for this week and we're fine. But speaking to people behind the scenes, they're completely shocked, the Springboks. They've been in it for 13 weeks now, a hard bubble. For 13 weeks. And, you're talking about softer bubbles prior to that. I mean, it's just not a natural existence. I mean, they've literally been living in, one or other hotel, and that's been their sort of the sort of border of their existence for close on 4 months now. And in between that, they've played some epic test matches, some of the biggest test matches you're likely to play. They're completely finished. I was amazed they actually got up as well as they did last week against the All Blacks. I expect they're going to fall apart this weekend. I really do. I hope I'm wrong. They continue to surprise me sometimes, the Springboks side. But I don't think any side has had it harder. Argentina, perhaps, to an extent. But they didn't have the Lions series beforehand. And you can't underestimate, I'm talking about the Springbok squad now, you can't underestimate the mental toll the Lions series took. They were 1-0 down. They had to come back from behind and win it as well. So there was all that pressure, they were straight into the Argentina series and then straight onto a plane to Australia for a 2-week quarantine / bubble. And then into 4 weekends of consecutive rugby against two of the best nations in the world. And then they're going to have a 2-week break and then they're back into Europe for another 6 weeks in a bubble. And then after that, those players are expected to go back to their URC franchises, those that are South African-based and, well, even the European-based few. So, I think it's going to take its toll on these players in the long run. And, what mental toll it's going to take, we will probably only find out in the coming months.